Welcome to the best of the RSN Breakfast Club. Here's a little bit of what we did. Take a listen.
Adam White is here every Tuesday, Wednesday and Thursday and Monday and Friday, funnily enough. He's here all the time. He's awesome. He's back again today. Good morning, Whitey.
Yes, good morning. If Xander Schauffele won the Masters, do you think he would order souffle as his dessert choice next year at the Masters dinner?
That's our opening, is it?
I was just thinking that.
As soon as you said Xander Schauffele and winning Masters, that's exactly where my mind went.
Well, there you go.
Because I knew that's what you were going to say. I knew that's what you were going
to
say.
Well, it's a big morning because I cannot wait to catch up with Ian Baker Finch because he's there at the Masters at the normal time of year in April, and it does look like it's playing hard and fast. So that's always exciting because the greens are quick and that creates drama in itself, and the azaleas are out, and it's,
I love the,
it's the way the golf should be at Augusta.
Jack's there.
Yes. Unfortunately, Tiger's not.
No, Tiger's not.
But
they're saving him a chair anyway.
Yeah, they're saving him a chair.
Important. That's important.
But obviously part of the coverage and has been for a long time, Ian Baker Finch. So looking forward to catching up with him. And then obviously Mark Leishman, who has got such a great record at the Masters. He's never won it, but he's got close quite a few times. So and history says, Daniel, that the players that have got good records at the Masters tend to continue to have good records at the Masters. So I think he's got a sneaky chance this week.
That is true. I'm very much looking forward to it. I'll be watching a fair bit of it, as you could probably imagine. Being, of course, having been there and be familiar with the property and having some level of connection to the place emotionally and physically. Like, it's, there's not many of us around, you know, it's one of those things. We call each other in the march, just get ourselves ready. The course calls me and I call the course, and we just get ourselves ready because we've got a connection. That Al Del Vecchio, a little grab, might be my favourite. I love that. Did you see, and I'm keen to talk to IBF a little bit later on. In fact,
IBF?
Yeah, we're mates. Well, when you've been there and you got the connection.
Well, that's what I was thinking.
Yeah.
You through Eamon Corner and he take you out for dinner and all that sort of stuff?
We just call it the corner when you're there. Those with real connections call it the corner. That's what we call it. I was watching Adam Peacock, who many of our listeners would know from Fox Sports, who does a great job covering the world of sport, but also certainly the A-League. But he posted a video yesterday of, I think it must have been on the Masters channel on Fox Sports, of the 86 Masters. Greg Norman in the 86 Masters. He birdied 14, 15, 16 and 17 in the run home on Sunday afternoon. Had he parred 18, he forces a playoff with Jack Nicklaus. He birdied, he wins, clearly. And his second shot on 18 was a 4-iron from 200 yards. They're not hitting 4-irons from 200 yards anymore. And I thought to myself, 4-iron! I can't remember the last time I saw someone hit a 4-iron on 18 at Augusta, because he flushed his drive down the middle. Perfect. Perfect spot. And he blocks it right out into the crowd. It was a disaster. A bit of setback for Shark. But I was thinking, 4-iron, 200. And then it got me thinking back to that video that we had a look at yesterday, the Bryson DeChambeau video, where he's having his speed drills and just trying to swing as fast and as hard as he could. They're hitting wedges in, and 9-irons into 18 now, not 4-irons from 200.
That's right. And Greg Norman was one of the biggest hitters in the world when he was at his absolute peak, which was kind of around that time, that sort of late 80s. And the year that he lost to Larry Myers, which is the year afterwards. On 18, he needed to par to stay in the playoff, having made a really good birdie on 17. He hit his drive way left, and it went over the bunker, and it was seen as this big thing that he was able to hit over the bunker on the left, and he had no shot really from where he was, and he managed to make par to get into the playoff. So often he choked, Greg Norman, but there are other times where just bad luck, you know, played a big part in things. And, you know, the thing with Greg Norman is he always put himself in contention.
He did.
And often it was that Sunday charge, whether it was in the Australian Open or the Masters here in Australia, or whether it was in a major, he'd come home hard late. So, yeah.
Would we be able to squeeze him into an RSN Legend series?
I think we could. He might be showering at the time, though.
Yes.
The vision we saw
The glass case of emotion.
Well, he's coming back to Australia to
live. Burgundy. What's I'm saying? We can get him in the studio. I think he'd love to be part of the Inner Sanctum.
Oh, I would have thought so.
I can't see that being a problem. We need to get the shark on. I'll get to little Frankie at the back to do something about that. Do something for us at some stage.
Now, I want to put you under the pump here.
Oh, no. What have I done today?
No, not necessarily that sort of thing. A very good friend of mine, Alistair Nicholson, who you know well as well, he broke...
From the national broadcaster?
Yes, from the ABC. He broke par for the very first time yesterday. He shot 71 at the Dunes.
Nice.
So he bogeyed 17 and then he parred 18 for a 71.
Well,
so
he's done, Nico.
For 16. Anyway, I think he feels that that's the highlight of his life.
Yep.
It's something that...
Got to go close.
Well, he and I have been both sort of chasing this white whale for a long time. And we'd both had the same best score for quite a while. We both had 73.
This has upset you, hasn't
it? It hasn't. And then he shot 72, and then now he shot 71. What is your greatest physical achievement you've ever had in your life? The one moment...
Sounds a bit more extreme than perhaps playing golf.
Well, I think he's thinking it's the highlight of his life, which is fair enough, because he's always wanted to do it. What's the one thing that stands out that you've done that... I knew you'd struggle with this.
Got no idea.
That sets apart from anything else you've done. So I'm not talking about getting married or having children or that sort of thing. One thing that you look back on, because you've played professional sport.
Dominated.
I haven't.
The word is dominated.
What's the one thing that stands out? It doesn't have to necessarily be a football career, but a physical feat that you look back and go, that's, I reckon... That's the best thing I've ever done.
That's a really difficult question to
answer. I know. That's why I asked it.
I don't know the answer to it. I don't know.
Like, I was thinking about this.
I ran a half marathon with no training.
Yeah, okay.
That's pretty good. Made me sick as a dog for 3 days, but I did it.
Because I thought about this last night. It's probably sort of unhealthy for me thinking about you late at night. But... Because I was thinking about, would it be, because I knew I was going to ask you this question, would it be, you know, a game that you just dominated for Hawthorn? Would it be, or is that, you know, maybe is it, you know, your junior cricket days making 100 in under 14s, or would it be climbing Mount Pichu-Wichu-Wichu, whatever it's called?
Mount Machu Picchu was a nice 4-day extravaganza, but it wasn't exactly a Herculean physical feat. It's fantastic. Don't get me wrong. I'd do it again. I don't know. I did dominate proceedings at Riverside for the 214 very quickly without playing for a year. That was nice. No, I don't know. I don't know. I think I've done anything overly extraordinary, I must admit. Dominated Fremantle round 2, 1997, 37-3. don't want to talk about it, but I don't know. It's a interesting question. I don't think I could answer it. It's certainly not a 71... Or was it 70 or 71?
71.
71 from Nico. That would be the number one. If I was able to shoot under par, that would be number one.
Because a lot of people who love golf, and Alistair is a very good golfer. He plays off, I think it's about 4 or 5 at the moment. So, and he plays a lot of golf, and it's his one. He loves it, and as I do as well. But it's one thing, like to me, in sport, as someone that loves a lot of sport, it's either your first 100, it's breaking 80 maybe, or breaking par, or in golf. But it also might be something else. See, from my perspective, I think one of my things I'm most proud of is walking from here to Sorrento.
There you go.
That's probably my greatest achievement, I think. I always thought it would be making 100, but...
So many to choose from.
Made so many. But, don't know. I'm not sure. But because it can be, sometimes it can be a sporting thing, playing local sport, but it might also be a physical thing. Like, you know, maybe you did the, that Oxfam walk.
Yeah, 100K walk.
Yeah, yep. Something like that sort of stands out.
I don't know. Well, let us know. 1-300-652-927. Sporting achievement you're most proud of. It's Rama just texted in, shooting my triple-double on Wednesday night basketball at MSAC.
In the 10:50 game.
In the 10:50, when everyone else was asleep.
Except the janitor's just vacuuming in the... down the corridor.
Send it through. Send it through. We'll let you through and give us your best. Probably getting through that half marathon was my most challenging physical feat because I refused to train because I was forced to do it. And that was an error on my behalf to refuse to train. But I did it. It took me forever. I did it under 2 hours too, which is a good effort for someone who hasn't trained for it. And that was after, that's about 10 years ago maybe. How long was that ago, Frank? 2013, 8 years ago. He remembers the year. 8 years ago.
Done that job.
He did it with me, Joey, at the back. He was a fitness machine. And he is these days too. Well, he did 50 Ks over the weekend now, man. Did you know that?
Yes.
Not in one sitting, but in two, three sittings. Was it, Frank? Three sittings.
If he did it in one sitting, I'd be impressed.
50 Ks in a weekend is a pretty good effort. Hey, tonight, now, IBF isn't too far away. Tonight is a great night. Not only because we've got Thursday night footy and the start of round four, but it's also the final local footy session before round one.
What's that?
Thursday night before round one.
Yeah.
So, to the nearest 100, how many men and women will pop up for the first time at their local footy clubs this year, do you reckon, at your local club?
Wow.
To the nearest 100. I'm thinking 600 or 700 people will rock up expecting a game on Saturday.
Well, I'm familiar with this because I would never train on the Thursday before the first game.
Why not?
Well, I'd never play the first game.
Why wouldn't you play the first game?
Well, you'd go and watch the first game just to see whether you've got the vibe, the feels that you wanted to actually be part of it.
So it's taking you this long to even start thinking about the vibes and the feels?
Yeah. I'm not training before I have to.
Right. And what would happen when you were watching the game in round one?
Well, if I felt that the forward line needed me, I'd put my hand up.
So you'd hope for a shellacking hill
of doors. Oh, yeah, you want a minimum 6-goal loss. And the commentary after the game, there, we just need more goals.
And then you just
I'm here to help.
Hi, guys.
I guess I could play again.
It is one of those nights, the night before round one. People just come from the trees. They come from everywhere.
Yeah.
The Thursday night before round one. And the best part is, when you don't pick them, having been involved in local footy for 12 years, when you don't pick them, they kick up a stink.
Yeah.
Hang on a second. Where have you been for the last 3 months, mate?
I'm busy with work. I've had the kids.
There'll be some great stories around there tonight.
It does happen with footy and cricket. Cricket's the same thing, the Thursday night before the first game. On the proviso that the weather is good, is that you just get them all, and they want a bat, and they want a bowl in the first half hour of arriving. but the same thing happens, in all seriousness, with the footy, that you're struggling to get drills done because you need 25 there to do a particular full ground drill.
Yeah.
And then the following Thursday, you need two football grounds to cater for.
Trust me, as a coach, it's a nightmare because you normally end up with 7 people and then there's 600 on the Thursday night and you're trying to work out how to fit everyone on the ground. It's a disaster. Very, very important night tonight. I can't wait to hear some of the stories. Joey's involved at local level. He'll give us some
The voice of the VAFA.
The voice of the VAFA. That's right. And we're doing some coverage of the VAFA, are we not?
Yeah, we are again this year. So on the Carnival Channel, the match of the round on the VAFA throughout the course of 2021. Of course, there was no VAFA last year. So it's great to have not only the VAFA, but so many local teams. We've talked about this throughout the course of this week, just with country footy returning over the Easter weekend, Metropolitan's turn this week. It's great. Fantastic.
I tell you what we need to wish good luck to the Australians at Augusta National for the US Masters, kicking off later tonight, tomorrow morning. And Ian Baker-Finch knows all about it. Aussie golfing, great major winner, and these days the best commentator in golf. He joins us to preview what's happening at Augusta National. Ian, good morning.
Good morning, fellas. How are you there back home in Australia?
We are well, mate. We are well. We're going okay. How are you over there?
Yeah, very good. It's warm and sunny and just beautiful, and the golf course is ready for these guys tomorrow morning.
Now, we can't wait for all the action to unfold, but there's been some renovation around Augusta National, has there? Is there a new media centre?
Yes. Yeah, actually, they call it the content centre now. It's one of the new words. They're one of the new buzzwords. Built a new big building. Looks like it's been here for 20 years, like everything they do at Augusta National. It's just superb, 10 out of 10. Everything about it across the street, and we all congregate here, whether we're streaming or radio, television, international, national, local, CBS, everyone, we're all here in the one building.
Fantastic. It's a great venue. The whole precinct there at Augusta National, they do a great job for the Masters and for the patrons and the media that get there. So good luck for the week. What about the atmosphere and the vibe? And we spoke about it before, Whitey and I, just about the different timing last year and the way the course played and the different vibe of the whole world in November last year. Is it back to normal this time around?
It's as close to normal as you can possibly get. It's, how can I say, there's only about 5,000 to 7,000 patrons here on site, so it's probably about a fifth or a tenth of what you normally see, so it's still pretty sparse, but a lot better than it was back in November, where it was really just the players and a few members and the media. So it's got a little bit of the vibe. I was over in Macau on 17 a little earlier, and you can hear the roars down there around the lake at 16. So, yeah, it's starting to feel a bit more normal, and the course, as I said, is just 100%, absolutely perfect.
And does it remind you again just how special the place is? Because obviously it was very different when you were all there in November. You're back only a few months later. Does it sort of, has it changed your view on it when you get back to it being normal again?
How can I say? It didn't lack anything at all in November, but it was just different. The blooming flowers weren't the same, obviously. The course didn't look quite as manicured just because of the seasonal changes and the grasses that they have. But having fans, or patrons, as they call them here, around makes a huge difference. But everyone loves coming back here. You know, we know what it's like in Australia. I've been watching the Masters either here on television, or I played in it, you know, from 85 to 96 or before then as a kid in Australia. You just get to see the beauty and the same golf course year in, year out. And I think that's the mystique here. Everyone loves coming back. Everyone knows it so well, and everyone looks forward to it. It's the perfect week of the year for this golf course.
Yeah, absolutely. What's the major thread, I guess, the narrative going into the start of the tournament? I kind of feel last year it was Bryson and the fact that he was just going to blow everyone away because he's going to hit it so much further than everyone else and he was going to destroy the course. It didn't happen. What are we thinking about this year? What are the talking points?
Definitely Bryson is one of the top five stories, as he has been since he started coming back after the COVID break in June of last year. He's, along with Dustin Johnson, everyone's wondering whether he can be the guy that can go back-to-back. You know, everyone's mentioned how he won in record style at 20 under par at the end of last year in the damper conditions, softer conditions. But I think who else would be right there? I think Justin Thomas played really well at the Players in these sort of hard, firm conditions. He'd be another one to look out for. John Rahm, I believe. Jordan Spieth, of course, who won last week in Texas on his way back. You know, biggest comeback since Lazarus. You know, you know, he has definitely come back from the dead. You know, no one thought he'd ever win again, and now all of a sudden he's second favourite at the Masters.
How's he done that, just by the way?
Well, you know, he hung in, didn't he? He never really let everyone get to him. It's been 3.5 years between wins. The Open Championship at Royal Birkdale, where I won, was his last win. And, you know, he just hung in. He didn't change anything. He didn't change coach. He did go to speak to Butch Harmon at one time to ask him a couple of questions just to confirm what his mate Cameron McCormick was telling him. But, you know, just a strong group of people around him, strong mind. And he looks really good. He's starting to get a little bit of the swagger back, a little bit of confidence. So, yeah, I put him in my top five.
Well, can't wait to see how he goes. I'm a bit of a fan of Jordan Spieth, I must admit, and I've been riding the roller coaster with him the last couple of years, and nice to see him get a win last week in Texas, yeah. As you say. Can I just take you back a little bit? And I'm sure one of the talking points this week, well, it always is in the world of golf, and I saw the chairman from Augusta National addressing this as part of his pre-tournament conversation earlier about the distance challenge in golf. I was watching a highlight of the 86 Masters yesterday, and when Greg was in Eddard Park to get a playoff with Jack and birdie to win, he hits his drive perfectly flush down the middle of 18. But he leaves himself 200 and he hits a 4-iron in. This is 25 years ago. He's hitting a 4-iron in 200 yards to 18 green. Mm-hmm. Now they're hitting wedge and a 9-iron. It's a totally different course. How does the course defend itself against that stuff?
And let me add, the tee's 40 yards back too.
Yeah. Okay, yeah.
So it's now 475, the 18th hole. I'm hitting the drive and the two hybrid in there when I play it. I have to walk up to see where the bloody flag is. So I can't even reach the bunker on one. They're driving it over the bunker on one. It is just amazing how far they hit it. But they want to join forces. They want to get the R&A, the USGA, and the Masters together. And not just one go out on a limb and start making rules willy-nilly. They want to get all of the stakeholders in golf together. But something definitely has to be done. And whatever it is, do we change the size of the driver head? Do we make the ball spin a little bit more? Whatever they decide to do, we can't keep making courses 8,000 yards or 7,300 metres. Yep. We just can't do it. There's not enough land.
Yeah, it's an interesting discussion because the only way they can defend themselves at Augusta particularly is with the greens now because, as you say, they've run out of land. There's nothing they can do, so they've got to make the greens, they've got to trick the greens up. Is that what's happening this week?
The greens are just really hard and fast. You know how they were at the end of 2019 at Royal Melbourne?
Yep.
For the President's Cup? Remember how hard and fast they were and how everyone just raved about how good they were? That's exactly how they look. They don't look like greens. They look like browns or purples. You know, they don't. They are not lush green, like we like to see them. You know, it'll be a great test. Firm, fast. If the wind gets up, even par will be a really good score.
Yeah. So who are you going with, Ian? Who's the one? You mentioned a few before, but if you had to sort of narrow it down to a couple with what you've seen, particularly since you've been at Augusta this week, what are you thinking?
Well, I think it's either going to be Cameron Smith, Mark Leishman, Adam Scott, Matt Jones, or Jason Day. One of those five.
That'd be a good result.
Wouldn't that be good?
Yeah, absolutely.
I really do like Justin Thomas and Dustin Johnson would be my top two, followed by Rahm, Spieth, Bryson DeChambeau. But, you know, the Aussie boys are good. I saw them all today. They're all out playing together. In good form, in good spirits, and they love the greens like this.
Well, we are on the eve of the US Masters. It's a very, very exciting time for golf lovers. And if you're from Warrnambool, it's a great time of year, full stop, because you've got the Masters and you've got the May Carnival just around the corner as well. And I reckon Mark Leishman will be loving both of those things, but a particular attention on Augusta National this week. Leish, good morning.
Boys, how's it going? Thanks for having me.
We are going very well. In the rankings, where does the May Carnival sit compared to the Masters?
Well, I've been to the Masters more times than the May Carnival, to be honest.
Is that right?
but the May Carnival is a huge week in Warrnambool. Certainly haven't drank as many beers at the Masters as I have at the May Carnival.
Well, if you win, that might change. And that's what we're hoping can happen.
Yeah, I hope so.
This week around. It's going to be different, though. It's back to normal, in the normal time slot. Last year was a very different experience. Have you been able to, upon reflection, contrast the two experiences, the April Masters versus the November one?
Yeah, I mean, chalk and cheese, really. You know, November, I mean, you very rarely, well, as a professional golfer, you very rarely play Augusta with no crowds. And to do that was very different. But to still have the energy of the place was really cool. And just, you know, the overall playability of it, you know, just played very differently. It was a lot softer. Temperatures were different. The wind was from a different direction. So it was not really, I mean, yes, it is the same golf course, but it plays very, very different in November to April. And I definitely enjoyed it in April a lot more than November.
Why do you play the golf course so well? You've got such a great record at the Masters. Is there any particular characteristics that sort of stick out as to why you play it so well?
There's probably a few reasons. You know, you've got to be really, really precise with your irons there. It really penalises bad shots, particularly into the greens, and rewards good shots because the areas on the greens are so small. You know, sometimes only 3 by 3 metres or, you know, 4 by 4 metres, and you have to know where to hit it to get it to that area. You're not always aiming at the pin to get it at the pin. So it's knowing where to hit it, and it's looking at your pin sheet before you even tee off, because you have to be, most of the time you've got to be coming in from a particular side of the fairway to get it at the pin, and that's not really very normal for a PGA Tour event. It's pretty normal at Royal Melbourne or Kingston Heath to have to do that, but not at most of the events that we play over here.
So you've played it now, played the Masters 7 or 8 times. Have you got to the point now where you know it intimately, or every time you go back there, you're trying to find little sort of secrets or little things that you perhaps didn't know the time before? How familiar would you say you are now with the layout?
I think the first probably 5 times you go there, you're learning multiple things a day. I'm still looking for things to learn now that might be the difference between finishing 2nd and 1st.
Yeah.
That might be the difference of one shot in a week. So, yeah, there's not a whole lot more to learn now, but, you know, you're always looking for that stuff that might be the defining factor. So, I can get there a little bit later now. Like, I used to get to the Masters on the Sunday morning and then play Sunday, play Monday, play Tuesday, Wednesday, before the tournament. Now I get there on Monday afternoon and get to the course Tuesday. So I feel like I'm more prepared to win it because I'm going to be fresher on Sunday than what I would have been 10 years ago playing there, having already been there for 5 days before the tournament. So it's very important, I think, as a golfer, to be fresh when you really need to be fresh, which is on Sunday afternoon when you're under the pump. You want to be making your best decisions then. And I guess to have the experience that I've had around there, and some good, some bad, I think as long as you're learning something every round, you know, that puts you in a better spot for hopefully when you get a chance to win that, you know, green jacket.
That's interesting. That's a good insight, because I mean, it's unlike most other tournaments through the year, at least that event is from start to finish. It's almost like grand final week. You've got the Brownlow on the Monday and all these functions in between, then the parade, and then you've actually got to play the game on the Saturday. And if you go too hard too early, you might run out of gas. That's interesting. So your adjustment now that you've found your little groove there, is that why you walk in confident, let alone the fact you can play the course, but time and maturity has allowed you to find a routine that works?
Yeah, I think there's a fine line between being too confident and ready and all that. You know, you have to go in there prepared, I think the word is. You know, because you can not even hit that bad a shot and make a double bogey. So you just have to be prepared for whatever that place throws at you, which can be, you know, it might be a wind change when your ball's in the air on 12 and it ends up in the water, or it might be a, you know, a putt that you hit that's not a great putt and the, you know, the wind blows it in, or, you know, you can't get too up or too down, and because I feel like that's where you can burn a lot of energy. And like I was saying before, you got to be, I guess it's exactly like you said, it's like grand final week. You don't want to burn all your energy up on the grand final parade. And, you know, you want to take it all in, but you've got that end goal that you want to obviously hold up the Premiership Cup. Like me, I want to be slide into that green jacket on Sunday night, and to do that I've got to make sure I don't get too up, too down early in the week, conserve energy, and I guess use my energy on the right things. I feel like I'm talking about energy a lot, but
yeah,
at the end of the day you have to play good golf, but you have to do it in the right way as well.
Having experienced the Masters myself in 2005, a long time ago, I was lucky enough to be able to get there and watch it all unfold. And you talk about energy, the crowd is, and the noise of the fans is quite unique, I imagine, from the Masters experience, because of the little cauldron, the valleys that create the little amphitheatres, particularly at the bottom of the course. Harnessing that and being able to block that, I assume, at times is going to be important as well. Is that part of the trick, do you think?
It is, yeah. I mean, the energy is just so high there because, I mean, everyone, players included, we're all so happy to be there. But everyone in the crowd, Masters tickets are very difficult to come by.
Mm.
And everyone there is so excited to be there. And the energy that's coming out of them, you can feel it. You really can. It's unlike any other tournament we play. And it's really cool. if you like playing in an atmosphere, which I do, I really, really enjoy that pressure. And, as a golfer, I guess, a professional golfer, we are performers and we want to, we want to perform and we want to show people what we can do. And that's the week that you want to do it on. There's, thousands, well, millions of people watching worldwide. And it's just that's the one tournament, that and the British Open, that I remember sitting up at night and just looking forward to all year, to get to Christmas time and you'd be thinking, all right, the Masters is only 4 months away. You look forward to getting up at 4 a.m. to go and watch that. And it's maybe not quite on that level now as a player that I've been there so many times because I need to concentrate on what I've got to do. But it's still really cool as a player to be able to go back there and have a chance to win that green jacket.
Aussie golf star Mark Leishman has joined us Masters Week on RSN 927.
I want to ask you about that, Mark. Is it still the one, along with the Open Championship, that you sort of almost skew your preparation to make sure you're peaking at the right time? Or as a golfer, you're just trying to peak all the time?
It's the two events. I think I've got my recipe down for how I play my best as far as the golf game goes. But this week, I'm taking a lot of time off in the week leading up to it, just conserving energy. I'd never play the week before the Masters for that reason, because if I was to play the Texas Open and finish high up on the leaderboard, possibly win it, who knows, that takes a lot of energy out of you. And I just want to get to the Masters. I'd love to be a major champion, particularly as Masters champion, and I feel like my best opportunity to do that is to rest up the week before and be fully prepared. So yeah, that and the British Open, I like to take it easy the week before and just chill out.
Yeah, that makes perfect sense. So just looking at your preparation coming in, you had some good results there sort of earlier in the season. We won't sort of talk about too much about the last few events, but how do you see your form going in? Is it a concern about what happened at the Players and at Arnold Palmer, or is it more about just worrying about moving forward and what's coming up?
No, not concerned. It's the quality is so high on the PGA Tour, and Justin Thomas, I think he won the Players, made the cut on the number at the Players, so
yeah,
he beat me by a shot on the first 2 days. You look at it that way and you take positives out of it. Obviously, there was a lot of things I could have done better. The match play last week, I actually played pretty poorly the first 2 days and won a match and lost a match, and then played amazing golf. I think I shot 5 or 6 under on in the third day. I had to win my match to get through and halve my match with 6 under. So it's probably as good as I've driven the ball probably ever, which is pretty promising.
Wow.
Just got to put everything together. I've been putting well, which is important around Augusta. Iron play probably hasn't been as good as what it is normally. I found something there on Thursday afternoon and Friday at the match play to give me confidence. And, I'm definitely optimistic, but again, it's such a, it's a funny game. You can feel like you've got it one day and then the next day you get out there and you don't. you feel like at the Players, I felt like I was never, ever going to hit a good shot ever again in my life. And then, you come out and hit some of the best shots that you've hit in 2 years in the match play. So I'm definitely optimistic and really, really looking forward to the opportunity to play good.
Are you in a house? Have you hired a house? Are you in a hotel? What's your situation?
Yeah, in a house. Hotels are very hard to come by in Augusta. the crowd to go in, so we rent a house. Got the whole family coming down. One of my best mates is coming with me, so we're excited. He's never been, so he'll get to have a look around Augusta and take in the sights, and hopefully
hopefully see some good golf from him.
Brad Johnson's a legend of the Australian Rules Football Fraternity, certainly the Western Bulldogs. And he's a great team member for with us here on The Breakfast Club as part of our Thursday night build-up to the AFL. You can watch him dominate proceedings on the Fox Footy as well. He's back again today. Jono, good morning.
Good morning, Half. Good morning, Whitey. How are you?
And we are going very, very well. Now, my spies tell me, Bradley, that there is some physical activity required from you today. Is that true?
There could be a little bit. There could be just a little bit, Half. Now, it's very much in the bubble. We can't let too much out at the moment. But there could be some. There could be the Fox Footy gift. Could be run today and shown on Bounce, obviously, this weekend.
Right.
So the location is secret, of course, because we're not letting anyone know where it is happening. But I'm up early. I've already been for a walk. I'm just starting to move the body half. I've been sort of training really hard for this because it's one thing. I don't want to get injured. That's the number one thing.
Yes.
But number two, this could be extremely embarrassing as well. So, and look, I think I'm, apart from Gazy, it goes Gazy is about 50 odd and then myself sitting at 44 and everywhere, all these other spring chickens that are flowing in behind, it's going to be difficult. So, but we'll have some fun, mate. It should be good.
Well, I did find it very funny on Good Friday when I was waiting for my fish and chips and they had Fox Footy up on the, or Channel 7 up on the TV in the fish and chip place. And you've absolutely destroyed Brent Harvey in the goal-kicking competition.
Did you win?
I don't know whether I destroyed him.
It was a
him.
Dominant display.
It was great fun. Number one, to pull on a jumper again, Half and Whitey, and I thought I was looking okay, and then Boomer ran out. Oh my God, he is in unbelievable condition at the moment, the little master, and we absolutely love him. And it's great. Look, I think he's had some seriously good feedback off the back of jumping into that goal kicking comp. Not so much because he didn't kick a goal, just for how good he looks.
Just the rig.
At the moment.
The rig's ridiculous.
Yes. So, the bicep.
So as good as he looked in the yard, as good as he looked in the yard, he did not perform. And
No,
don't make excuses for him. So when you were being interviewed as the winner and the money that you'd raised for charity, Boomer's just got his head down with this look of absolute fury on his face that he hadn't won. And I believe the next day, and we can confirm this tomorrow, he was at the park practicing his goal kicking.
See, the issue was, the first two were actually pretty easy because the first one was a dribble kick. He just missed. I got the dribble kick home. And then after that, we had to do some set shots. But what we had on the footy shorts, we had two battery packs because we're mic'd up. Okay,
yep.
So we had the earpiece in and we had the microphone on. So running in, the battery packs were that heavy on the shorts, right? They're basically down around our knees, it felt, when we were trying to kick the ball. So it was, honestly, it was a lot more difficult than we thought it was going to be for that reason, because you couldn't run or come in quickly because, you know, your shorts were bouncing around. So it was, but it was great fun, honestly. And that's why I called for the barrel at the end, tried to double some money and was able to kick a barrel home. But it was great for the sponsors as well, because they ended up tipping in, I think it was $35,000 to the Royal Children's Hospital, which was huge. And Boomer and I were just obviously rapt to be a part of it and wear whatever we had to support the kids on the day.
Tom Mitchell was a part of it all, and I think he's with us on the Breakfast Club this morning. Tom, you with us?
Yeah, got you, Half. Sorry, a few technical difficulties early, but we're good to go now.
That's all right, buddy. It can happen. That's okay. As long as you're with us, we're happy with that. Yeah. How'd you pull up from the weekend? And more importantly, the review process. What was it like? We'll go straight into that, because I was live at the game there on Monday watching it all unfold. Boy, I thought you had him in the last 5 minutes.
Yeah, it was a tight one, wasn't it? It was your typical Easter Monday game. Both teams going at it, and a really good atmosphere, obviously 50,000 people there. We hadn't had that for a while, but yeah, we did have our chances. But similar to probably the week before against Richmond, we left our run a little bit late. We started playing some really good footy in the second half, but we need to start games like that. So I think if we can do that this week against Freo, we'll be a good chance to win the game.
Tommy, how was Clarko after the game? In games like that, you know, the coach can go either way. He can be obviously proud of the group and the fight back, but then can also, like Terry Wallace did back in the day when we just lost to Collingwood, you know, you get a pat on the back, I'll spew up, sort of side of the side of things. How was Clarko post game?
Yeah, exactly right. What you just said. It was mixed emotions. He was proud of the effort, but also frustrated because, you know, there were things that we'd practiced all pre-season and things that we know work that just took us a half a footy until we started to implement it. So, you know, there was frustration with things we were doing with the ball, how we were defending, which was sort of out of character, and we were doing things that we hadn't done over the last couple of months in our training, and I think that was where the frustration came from. But having said that, we've shown some real competitiveness and fight. You know, the Essendon game being down 40 points, this game being down 20 or 30, and being able to stick in the game and fight it out. So that he was proud of us for that.
One of the things that intrigued me, Tom, was the sign that said GT, which was either green time or go time or something like that, because it seemed that when that was put up on the bench, you did seem to go quicker and you did look a lot better. Can you explain a little bit more about what that means without giving away too many secrets?
I actually got to be honest, I didn't even see the sign. It's not gin and tonic, is it? Not G&T. GT. I'd have to see the sign to actually be able to tell you. Generally, most teams sort of have, you know, a call to action in terms of slowing the game down or speeding the game up. And, I think when you're down in a game, you're left with no option. So, it's funny, like when we were given that mode to go into, we seem to play better footy and, we just sort of play with a bit more freedom. So it is something that we need to just do from the start of the game.
Yeah, I was going to say, I mean, it might be a bit of a dumb question, but I'll ask it anyway. Why don't you play like that all the time? Or is it literally unsustainable to go at that sort of speed? Or are you risking too much to go at that sort of speed to do it all game or early in the game? How does it sort of come about that?
Yeah, it's a good question. I think with these new rules, everyone's sort of, investigating and playing around with what is realistic. And, that could be a factor of fatigue and going too hard too early and spending your petrol tickets. But, you know, if you're willing to do that to get a lead early in the game, then it might be worthwhile doing that and then hanging on. So I think all teams are exploring different ways of approaching it. And we're only three games in, so I think it's just going to evolve as the season goes on.
We were talking to one of the other players earlier in the week, Tom, about being three games in, just they mentioned that, and the body's starting to feel like it's in normal season swing now. I mean, obviously last year was very different. The games sort of finished quite quickly and there was only 17 of them. But are you starting to feel like you're ready now? You're match hardened going into the rest of the season?
Pretty close. I think it normally does take you a few games to blow the cobwebs out. And, the first game you're always sort of gasping for air and just sort of you think it's the hardest thing you've ever done, and then your body just sort of adjusts and you do get used to it. You get what we call footy fit, so obviously there's, you know, you're pretty running fit in the pre-season, but then you know, footy fitness is different. So I think after three games you're pretty close to that level.
Tom, having won the Brownlow medal, you know what it takes and you know what the umpires are looking for from your own performances now. Do you sit there and sort of say, yep, that was a three voter today? You might have six votes on the board or already out of three rounds.
No, not really sure, to be honest. It is funny. Some games where you think you might get a few, you don't. And then games where you think, I've had an average run, you do. So it is hard to predict sometimes. And that's probably why it's not worth reading into too much. You just sort of go out there and give it your best shot and try and help your team win and, let that stuff look after itself.
Well, so on that, I want to talk more about what happened on Monday when O'Connor came to you at the first bounce. Firstly, did you expect that would happen?
We did speak about it in our planning. We thought, you know, he obviously went to Lachie Neale the week before that and, did a good job by Lachie's standards. Lachie's obviously probably the best player in the comp. So, we planned for it. It obviously happened, but I think with those sort of things, it can work in our team's favour in that we can sort of manipulate stoppages and get things on our terms. So it was great to see, you know, Jago O'Meara had a ripping game and had over 10 clearances, and Liam Shields had about 30 touches as well. So in terms of sharing the load and, everyone sort of bouncing off each other, it actually helps us as a team as well.
So do you consciously then change modes in the way that you're going to play? Do you have a conversation with your teammates at the first, after the first goal or stoppages, to say, okay, this is happening now, so I'm now going to do this? Or do you just continue to try and hunt the footy and do what you would normally do?
Yeah, you do make some subtle adjustments, and I sort of got a bit of a go-to plan of when you do get a run with player. And as I said, you can play a sacrificial role and, you know, do things that I suppose spectators may not be aware of, but it is helping free your teammates up and, you know, get them going. And it does help our midfield as a group. So, you know, there's going to be games when it's your turn and your turn to pop up. And then there's going to be games where you take a backward step and, you know, do things to sacrifice to help the team on that day.
Tommy, that's a great approach in terms of, you know, obviously sharing the load and your midfielders, your other teammates standing up when the opposition are putting time into yourself, which is in some ways a positive for you anyway with where your footy's at. But speaking of positives, the rise of some of the younger players, you know, CJ and Jacob Kaczynski, Tyler Brockman kicked a ripper in the last quarter on the weekend. We watched from afar. What are they like up close, and how far can these guys go in the competition?
Yeah, it's been pretty exciting. CJ's already a crowd favourite. He's a cult hero. you know, he's going to be something special. His athleticism is just off the charts. He's pretty much the quickest at the club and also the fittest. So he's got some real attributes. Dylan Moore, another one. He's, you know, he finished the year really strongly last year, and he's sort of carried that into this year. Cozzy, Brocky, you know, there's a number of guys which, you know, that next wave of and generation of Hawthorn players, it's pretty exciting. It's a different feel around the club, but there's so much energy and enthusiasm that these guys are just keen to get better, and I think it's helping the older guys too.
A different feel and different expectations probably this year for the first time, really, I think, outside and probably inside the club too, Tom, that you know, Alistair Clarkson's been quite vocal saying we're probably not contending for a premiership this year, so there is a different level of expectation. Just on the back of that, what have you seen from the first 3 weeks? Have you sort of overachieved what you thought you might be able to get to, or is this about the standard that we'll see from the Hawks this year, really competitive, might just fall short every now and then?
Yeah, it's hard to pick up on a trend after 3 games, but I think the pleasing thing has been that we've been competitive in every game. We obviously want to win every game we play, but I feel as though the belief of the group is there, and I think that carries you a long way. When you start to genuinely believe in your system and you get evidence of things working, you know, who knows what can happen. You know, you're looking at a team like Sydney who are up and about at the moment. No one would have predicted that earlier in the year, and you know, anything could happen to any team. So we're just going to keep working hard and have belief in ourselves and just see where it takes us.
You're going to play the Dockers. They play well at home. They're not so good away from home. So your approach to this week, because when you look at where the season's at, staying in touch with the eight, and your couple of losses, you're right, to Richmond and Geelong, both grand finalists last year, a big comeback against the Bombers. So the confidence levels going over and taking on this Dockers team, where do they sit?
Yeah, they're obviously a formidable team at home, so we know it's going to be a pretty big challenge. But yeah, it's just going to be about preparing well. It's our first interstate trip together as a team, so I think all the boys are looking forward to getting away, going to Perth, but actually knowing that we'll be able to come home this time and not get stuck in hub. So everyone's pretty pumped about that. But yeah, it's going to be tough, and I'm not sure is Fife playing, or they haven't decided that yet?
Yeah, he'll play. Yeah, he's been given the tick, I think.
Well, that makes the challenge a bit harder, but you know, they're a really good team over there, but yeah, we'll just give it our best shot.
Have you been impressed with the Freo midfield? Leave Fife out of it, because I mean, I guess he's played forward a lot in the games that he's played. But just the Sarong, Brayshaw, Chera, they look like they're the core of the next 10 years for Freo in that midfield.
Yeah, there's some pretty good young players there. We played them the back end of last year, and they beat us over there. And some of those young guys you mentioned, they had really good games. So, you know, you add those young guys on top of Fife and Mundy, the guys who have been doing it for forever, really. Yeah, it's a pretty good midfield. So it's going to be a good challenge this week.
Tom, what do you prefer? Would you like to go to the young buck of a Brayshaw, or the older 36-year-old in David Mundy?
Oh, it's tough either way, isn't it? You got the young legs, or you got the old wise players. So it doesn't get easier either way you go. But I've loved watching you know, when I actually finished schooling over in Perth, and my old man was working at the Dockers, and yeah, I used to love watching Fife and Mundy then. They were sort of, especially Mundy, a player that probably isn't recognised as across the competition as, you know, with the absolute A-graders, but I think he'd have to be right up there. He's been a super player for a long time, and probably doesn't get enough recognition.
Oh, he's an absolute jet, no doubt about that. David Mundy continuing to perform at a very experienced level every week for the Fremantle Dockers. What's the week like? What happens from here? Just for our listeners now, Hawks fans out there, Tom, that want to find out how you go about your week. What happens from here? We're a Thursday. You play Sunday. What's the timeline look like?
Yeah, so, well, I've actually got a bit of a different week. I'm moving house today, so that's a bit different.
But, oh, yeah.
We got a day off today, so normally that's just, you know, go and switch off from footy, go and do something else outside of footy to keep your mind fresh. So that'll be today. Tomorrow will be our main training day, so we'll prepare as if we would for a game, do our sort of match simulation drills, and then Saturday we'll fly to Perth, so the day before normally, get in there and have a little run around at Optus Stadium, and yeah, then we're into it on Sunday. So yeah, that's sort of how the rest of the week looks.
Do you get your own room these days because of COVID protocols? You've got to have your own room?
Yeah, you do. So no bunking in with anyone.
Great. Who was the worst to bunk in with, just by the way?
Well, that's actually been the... it's actually been like that in my entire time at Hawthorn.
Is it?
It's always been you get your own room, but I'm just trying to think who would be annoying to room with. probably John Segler. He's pretty grumpy, so probably him.
It depends. If you won and you're able to have a few frothies, I reckon it'd be good fun.
he'd probably be the best then, wouldn't he?
Now, you said you're moving house. It sounds like you live in Hillsville Sanctuary at the moment with all the bird noises going on in the background.
I know, sorry. I've been kicked out of the house so they can chuck all the couches in, so I'm sitting out the front in the cold next to all the birds in the trees.
No, it sounds lovely. Don't get me wrong. It's a lovely sound. And I remember seeing a photo or a video of you in your gym setup at the old house. Have you able to transfer the gym? Because it looked pretty elite to me.
Yeah, no, it was a nice setup, the gym. Probably won't have room to set that up, but, you know, hopefully can find another house one day and set it up, because I'll give them a little plug. Iron Edge, they've been pretty good to me and helped me set up that gym through COVID, which was pretty helpful preparing for last year's footy season. So that was pretty awesome.
30 player lists, what you know, in the AFLW. Kate Hornaugh is about that. She's a star for the Melbourne Football Club. I, in fact, think she might be the difference for them throughout their finals campaign. They've got Adelaide in Adelaide this week. They beat them a month ago. Can they do it again? They're the hottest team in footy. Kate joins us on the Breakfast Club. Good morning, Kate.
Good morning. How are you going?
Going very well, thank you. Not as well as you girls, though. I mean, your last month of footy has been nothing short of extraordinary. When you saw the rejigged fixture, Kate, did you think that it was going to be possible to do what you've done?
Yeah, look, I guess internally we definitely had faith. It was probably a bit of a shock to the system when you see you've got the three top teams coming up in the last three rounds and you've pretty much got to knock off every one of them. But I guess our mentality was, if you want to be the best, you've got to beat the best. We've managed to do that so far. So I guess another challenge this week awaits.
So what did you learn from beating Adelaide 3 weeks ago at Casey Fields? Now, very different in Adelaide this week when they're on their home deck. But what did you learn about how to beat them 3 weeks ago?
Yeah, I think we played them. I think it was in our second or third season. And we actually had to win that game to make finals. And they just completely bullied us. So going into that game a couple of weeks ago, we just needed to be really strong around the contest. Obviously, they've got a couple of big-bodied mids in Marinoff and Hatchard and Phillips. So, we just wanted to win the contest and play the footy in our forward half. And I think we did a really good job of that a couple of weeks ago. So we'll have the same game plan going into this week.
Kay, congratulations on your year so far and good luck this weekend. We're all on Daisy watch at the moment. How is she going? Will she get up?
Yeah, geez, I think everyone's on Daisy watch at the moment. We'll be right without her. We've won a couple of games without her, so surely we don't need her.
Easy. Yeah,
it's just the story, isn't it? And look, we feel for Daisy, obviously, you know, knowing Bob Murphy really well and what happened in 2016 and his injury. You just hope that she's able to recover to get back, because it's just a great story for what she's done so much for the Melbourne Football Club, for the AFLW in general, really.
Oh, yeah, 100%. And she is so important to our team, like not only what she does on the field, but just her leadership. And, I mean, she's been able to continue that when she has been injured. You know, she's the first one barking out orders and coaching from the sidelines. But, yeah, look, knowing Daze, like if anyone's going to get up for a grand final, it'll be Daisy Pierce. So, yeah, I guess we'll just have to track her progress. She's been going pretty well. I think she was out there having a jog and a kick the other night, so... anything can happen when it's Daisy.
Yes, you wouldn't put anything past her. Kate, I'm just interested, have you changed anything in the way that you've played over the last 4 or 5 weeks when you've been on this streak, or is it just confidence got into the group and you just grew with what you were trying to do under the tutelage of Mick Stanier?
Yeah, I think we probably had to change a few things. Obviously, we had a loss to the Bulldogs and Collingwood 2 weeks in a row, and in AFLW, obviously, every game's so important. And if you drop two, you're kind of sliding down the ladder and you're missing out on finals. So we swung a few changes. Obviously, Daisy went forward. We threw Eden Zanker in the midfield, Teagan Cunningham in the ruck. I think they just gave us a different look and a bit of a different balance in the team, like Ido going into the middle, just another big body. I think as well as those changes, just a bit of a change in mentality and... we just really wanted to hunt the footy and be a tough team to play against. And I think we've really bought that over the next few weeks. And in finals, that's what you've got to be. You've got to be tough around the contest. You've got to just will yourself over the line. So, I think we've really bought that, and hopefully we can this week again.
Keen to talk about Eden Zanker a bit. She's 183. She's a big unit, and she's playing as a mid. And 183 in the women's game is ruck sort of territory, Kate, and she's playing as a mid. Did you think she had this in her?
Yeah, definitely. Ido's a beast. I've been lucky enough to see her pretty close in the forward line training with her all the time. And, yeah, she's just a beast. She's hard to match up on. She's a tall girl. She's strong. She's really quick for her size too. So I think that move to the midfield is here to stay. And she loves being around the footy. I think last week she had something like 7 or 8 free kicks in the first quarter. So opposition teams don't really know what to do with her or how to handle it. So I'm glad she's on my team.
Kate, from one of the tallest to one of the smallest in Lily Mithen, I think her year has been absolutely sensational. Out on the wing, just running around, uses the ball so well. Have you seen her year as an individual and the growth in her game, I think, has gone to another level?
Don't be nice just because you're mates.
No. Lil definitely has taken her game to another level this year. She worked really hard in the off-season. Obviously, we did a lot of our training together during COVID, heaps of running sessions, so... I've seen the hard work she's put into her game, and I think probably the difference this year is, yeah, not only her fitness, but just her composure with ball in hand. She's one of our best users, and she's just getting really consistent with her footy, so she's really important to our team. I've got a little shout-out. Go, Lil.
Yeah, go, Lil. You still housemates, you two?
Yeah, we are.
Oh,
yep.
Goodness. She hasn't got you any horses, has she, with the old man?
She's got a few, yeah. We get sent through the tips every week.
Nice work.
Get on Mr. Cookie. He always seems to win.
He does, Mr. Cookie. He's very good. Always bloody wins. That was the best of the Breakfast Club. If you want to hear the full interviews again, go straight to the website, rsn.net.au.